House Rules Committee to order at 8:13 on April 27th, 2005. For the record, present are Representative Berkowitz, Harris, Rothberg, Coghill, McGuire, and Kerkula. Kerkula. Beth, I've only known you over a decade. My apologies to your father and mother. On today's calendar, Kerr.
There you go.
Like Deborah Kerr.
Curtain.
I call her Carr.
Kerr.
Yeah, you call me Carr.
That's the point I was making to you. It's not Carr.
I know. Now I'm really worried about this.
But he tries.
Now that we got that on the record.
Right. On today's calendar, we have Senate Bill 51, Public Assistance. And there should be two draft amendments on that.
After last night, we all need it.
Right. And and we also have HB 98, the money bill. With that, we'd like to take up Senate Bill 51. Let's see. I ran Janet off. I don't think we have a CS. We have some amendments somewhere. Is there anybody to help us? Yes. We are rescued in Stanford.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Members of the committee, for the record, my name is Sue Stancliffe, staff to Representative Mike Kelly. Before you are two amendments to SB 51, and Mr. Chairman, if you would, your prerogative, you want to move these before I can talk about them, or would you like for me to explain it?
I think in light of everything, why don't you explain them first before we just adopt them?
Okay. Certainly. On the First Amendment, which is page 3, line 17, delete tribal assistance program in the state and insert an Alaska Native Organization Family Assistance Program under AS 47-27070. All we're doing on page 3 is using statutory reference instead of tribal assistance program. Throughout this, you'll see where it discusses federally approved tribal assistance plans. When talking about the state's program, we use the statutory language, so this is a matter of continuity in drafting. And on the Second Amendments, speaking of organizations on page 9 and page 11, we're inserting new subsections that define organization and Alaska Native organizations that they refer to the statutory reference of 47-27070.
Excuse me, do we have that in the packet, Janet, the statutory definition, or is it?
Chairman, just so we can discuss this on the record, I want to move amendment number 1.
Okay, we have a motion to adopt. We'll mark G1 as amendment number 1. Have a motion before us to adopt amendment number 1. I'll object for purpose of discussion. Representative Harris.
Mr. Chairman, you know, I guess the question right off the top is, and it's what you were asking, but a tribal assistance program, and we had the opportunity yesterday. It's amazing how these things, Representative Coghill and I, to meet with some of the Native leaders of Alaska, and one of the issues that they brought up was the involvement with the tribes in their organizations as far as decision-making, that sort of thing. So I'm just asking a question. It says a tribal assistance program, and you're replacing that with an Alaska Native organization. What description, I guess, is in the statute. What is the reason for that?
Through the chair, Representative Harris, the federal government has approved this program, the tribal assistance, and the state of Alaska has to have a federally approved program to administer it, which is what the purpose of the 4727 statute is designating the, and you know, creating the Alaska Native Organization Family Assistance Program. When this was first put into statute in the year 2000, it was put in, my understanding, as a pilot program, and now we are going to codify it. We're going to put it into statute because it has been very successful. It's worked well in administering these funds. So all we're doing in is referring to the organization that is approved by the federal government to administer this program.
So, Mr. Chairman, if I may follow up, when this bill came through the other body, that issue was never brought up?
No, I saw that through the chair. You're correct.
So, so what you're saying is then a tribal assistance program as with no definition and there doesn't meet the criteria that the federal government has to have for funds to flow in under this program?
Through the chair, Representative Harris, no, that's not what we're saying, because we believe that the language in the bill and the program itself does meet the federal criteria. But for clarity and continuity in our statutes, we would like to replace this language with the statutory language. We had a similar issue in the budget when dealing with the HES budget. The allocation under the appropriation for public assistance, the allocation was using tribal assistance program. And we said, well, that's not defined in our statute anywhere. It's actually defined under Alaska Native Organization Family Assistance Program. So we amended the budget language to be consistent with statute and simply would like to do that in this bill as well.
Just one. We do have Ellie Fitzgerald from HES available for comment and questions, too. I just want to make the committee aware of that before we take any further action. Representative Berkowitz.
Yeah, the language that's currently the bill, is that patterned on anything? Is that federally patterned, or is it something that was drafted here for Alaska only?
Through the chair, Representative Berkowitz, it's my understanding that it is not federal language, that it was drafted by the Department of Law.
Okay, then two further questions, if I could, Mr. Chair.
Carry on.
The organizations listed under 4727070 mm-hmm. are, in essence, the regional nonprofits. Are there any village nonprofits that exist out there or any other form of tribal assistance programs?
Through the chair, Representative Berkowitz, no. It is specific to these 13, very specific, that only these 13.
Okay, and
organizations.
So if a new program came into existence, for example, if the 13 regionals decided to create a new program to coordinate their efforts, it would not be a part of this bill under the proposed amendments.
Through the chair, Representative Berkowitz, I don't know the answer to that as a yes or no. I know that in this bill that does set up a section of provision for regional, but perhaps the Department of Law could answer that. I don't know to give you a yes or no answer.
If I might suggest for the committee, we do have folks here from HES that would testify. Might be appropriate, Representative Harris, you know, withdraw your motion so we can talk about both amendments at once. Or what's the will of the committee there? If you care about
both
that,
both amendments at the same time.
Yeah. Well, then what I'll do. Actually, we can leave the motion before us, and we can just talk about everything as far as I'm concerned.
That's all right.
Okay. Anybody got their? I don't see anybody with the uniform rules around here.
We do that all the time.
Yeah, right. I know. I'm just being particular.
Just bring them up and tell them.
Right, Ms. Fitzgerald. Is there any? Please come forward and help try to shed some light on this issue. Is there anybody from Department of Law that's available either, too?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. If you could come forward, please.
You sound like a very enthusiastic.
Good morning.
Give us old veterans there in the house some wisdom, and for the record, please.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman. My name is Ellie Fitzgerald, and I'm with the Department of Health and Social Services Division of Public Assistance. And to answer your question specifically, Representative Harris, through the chair, about the regional Native nonprofits, the federal law does specify the 12 regional Native nonprofits. Representative Berkowitz.
We look alike.
Okay. Jeez. Through all that discussion.
We have a very similar perspective of the universe.
Conversation got blurred. At any rate, the federal law does allow the option to the 12 regional nonprofit organizations in Alaska, as well as Metlakatla Indian Association, to run temporary assistance programs. And in the federal law, it's referred to as tribal temporary assistance programs for needy families. Part of the requirement and the criteria to run those programs is they must have a federally approved tribal temporary assistance for needy families plan, which is their program plan that they submit and get approved by the federal government. There's also provision in the law that requires that they run a comparable program to Alaska, and that's a special provision in the federal law for Alaska organizations, and something that the federal government looks at when they approve a federal plan. So when you ask the question about other regional or any village corporations who might want to operate, they could not apply for and operate a program directly and receive the federal funds directly from the federal government. They may be able to subcontract with an organization and provide services, similar to the state where we have contracts with community organizations to provide some of the services that we provide as part of administering the program. But they could not apply for, receive funding, and be the overall administrator of the program, as the federal law is currently written. And the proposals going forward through Congress now on reauthorizing the TANF program, there aren't any provision that changes that.
Further questions? Does the Attorney General's office agree with that, or have any other further comments on the line of questioning?
I have nothing further. No. Kelly did a nice job explaining it.
Do you mind going on the record?
Oh, so? Stacy Crayley from the Department of Law.
Thanks, Stacy.
Sorry.
No, that's all right. Any further questions of the witnesses? So, Representative...
Quick one.
Kurtula.
See, Jesus, I don't believe this. I'm very embarrassed.
I'm going to miss it.
Don't worry.
There's a little joy in their day.
Thanks. Is language in the bill, as it came to us, the finance, I guess it's a finance version, does it work for getting the money to the programs if we leave the language as it is without these amendments?
Representative Kurtula, through the chair, the current language of the bill before the discussed amendments does allow us to continue operating programs as they do today and provide the state supplemental funding.
Well, does the department have an opinion on the amendments?
Mr. Chair, I think the...
For the record, please.
For the record, Stacy Crayley from the Department of Law, and I think from the Department of Law's perspective and in discussions with the Department of Health and Social Services, we don't object, but we don't think... I mean, we're kind of neutral on the amendments. They don't change the bill to a point where we're concerned about federal funding, but we felt that the bill that was before you prior to the amendments was sufficient, so we don't really have an opinion on the amendments.
Well, as I understand it, it's not a matter of sufficiency. We'd like to do what's correct in terms of the statute and continuity, and so we avoid any undue debate that's unnecessary. So, I mean, my take on your statement is that you're neutral, but do you have an opinion on the drafting of the way the statute is?
Mr. Chair, again, Stacy Crayley from the Department of Law. I would concur with Ms. Fitzgerald that the language as is was sufficient. That answers the question. We worked with Representative Kelly's office with this language to ensure that if the amendments passed, it would work the way that we wanted it to work. But I don't believe that we wanted to come in here and not object to the amendments, but again, we felt that the bill as it was met the intent of what we needed it to do.
Well, it just seems to me there's should be a right answer in this thing. It's not rocket science. Either it's the term of art of Alaska Native organization, or the alternative is the tribal entity, or whatever the statement is. One is right, or one's not right, or is it, in fact, both could be right, depending on what context it's used in.
Mm-hmm. Mr. Chair, again, Stacy Crayley, I actually think both could be right. I don't think either one. You're right. I mean, I apologize for not having a more precise answer, but I think both of them would work.
Representative Coghill.
I think the ticklish part of this, and I'm going to agree with the amendment, but the ticklish part is we have been struggling in Alaska on the legal definition of tribal. And that's true whether it becomes a matter of Indian Child Welfare Act issues. It's true whether it deals with funding issues and a whole range of nonprofits. And I think all the sponsor wants to do, and I concur, is clarify that we're talking about Alaska Native Family Assistance Program, and I think that kind of clarity is going to help us so that we can do it properly, we don't get tangled up into other things, and it just narrowly, it just separates from that, us from that discussion is what I'm thinking. So I'm gonna agree with that because I think this program does work. It gives them huge flexibility. They are allowed to do a whole range of things that we don't do under our temporary assistance right now. For example, they can keep a certain percentage back for alcohol and rehabilitation programs. So they also, under this mechanism, if I remember correctly, are able to use some of the child support issues if that's still in the law. And the last time I read it, it was, but I haven't read it this morning. But they're able to take a percentage that the state doesn't get and keep it back. And that's it's a relationship that they have with the federal government that we're taking advantage of, quite frankly. So there's a whole range of flexibility here. I would hate to see this get tangled up into other tribal legal issues. And so if we can make that clear, I'm game.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Berkowitz.
But I think this amendment is bringing those other tribal issues mm-hmm. to the fore. I mean, the way I look at this amendment, quite frankly, is this is an effort by those who are not friendly to the notion of tribal sovereignty mm-hmm. and are making efforts to seek to have the language removed from a statute, even though it's completely innocuous in context. It's completely innocuous. And so we're going to have a battle, I imagine, either here or in public opinion, court of public opinion, about whether we're being respectful enough for the existence of tribes. And I would just as soon not have that battle and let an otherwise perfectly fine bill move through without bringing in this collateral issue.
Well, Representative Berkowitz, that's why we're having a meeting right now, to try to avoid that. Yeah. That's my understanding. I might ask the departments, looking at the First Amendment, page 3, line 17, there's a deletion of the terms a tribal assistance program in replacement with a Alaska Native Organization Family Assistance Program under 4727070. We have in line 16 the term Federal Tribal Family Assistance Plan. Mm-hmm. Is that a correct term of art, the Federal Tribal Family Assistance Plan? So there is a plan under federal law that uses those terms? Okay.
Representative Roper, I'd just like to respond that really what this section is doing is that it's setting out that in order to receive an Alaska Native Family Assistance Program grant from the department, the organization must have received federal approval of their federal tribal family assistance plan to operate a tribal assistance program. In the federal law, it is referred to as a tribal assistance program. But in Alaska, so that's what the federal government is approving, their plan to operate that tribal assistance program. The federal government does not approve a Native Family Assistance, Alaska Native Family Assistance Program. That is what the department is responsible for doing, and this is one of the contingencies.
Well, forgive me for not being that familiar with this program, but are we not setting up or extending or creating the Alaska Native Family Assistance Program in this bill?
Representative Roper, this bill reauthorizes,
okay.
And essentially, as Representative Kelly's staff indicated, codifies it in law. It was initially set up in 2000 as a pilot program that sunsets June 30th, 2005.
So looking at the First Amendment here, the request for the amendment is to just replace that portion of that subsection with a term that the Representative Kelly wishes to be closely or associated with our program versus the federal program, I think.
You got it.
I mean, that's all.
And if you look under Section 3, it's actually defined that way, Alaska Native Family Assistance Grant. Page 11.
Of the bill. Good. Page 11.
Page 11, line 13.
Okay. Any further discussion? Representative, Chair Representative, presence of Representative Coring.
Thank you. I'm sorry for being late, sir.
It just seems to me that the amendments are appropriate. We're really very slicing language very thin here. But any further comments from the committee?
Mr. Chairman?
Mr. Chairman. Mr. Speaker.
Just so I completely understand, I'm not sure I want to get into this debate either. So under the definition section here, Alaska Native Family, a family assistance program, which this First Amendment attempts to change the language earlier in the bill. And then we have the federally approved tribal family assistance plan, which is in the bill now. So one of those, it seems like they both meet federal approval under this. I mean, one's a description under Alaska statute, but the other one would meet federal approval as well, it seems to me like. So is there any, can you tell me, is there any difference between the two as far as meeting federal approval?
Mr. Chairman, I'm not sure I track what you were noting. Representative Harris, could you
On page 11, line 15 there, subsection 12 there, whatever, Alaska Native mm-hmm. Family Assistance Program. That's what this that's what this First Amendment attempts to do, is to insert that definition into the statute in place of 13, which is federally approved tribal family assistance plan. And I'm just wondering, because the sponsor of the bill testified earlier that it was to bring it into sort of agreement with Alaska statute, but yet something that met with the federal plan. And I'm just wondering, does not number 13 meet with the federal plan as well?
Through the chair, Representative Harris, the answer to your question is yes. And I just noticed this, the reference under subparagraph 12 on page 11 references 4727-200, whereas the amendment references 4727-070, and I don't have my statute book in front of me, but...
There is no 4727-200.
Okay. No,
There isn't?
No.
That's a problem.
It goes from 4727-085 sanctions, 4727-900 definition.
It's in the bill. It's in section 3.
It's because it's in the bill.
Right.
It's a new...
Well, 200 is section 3.
200 is the new section.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
Oh, you're right.
Mr. Chairman. Oh, never mind. I'm reading the law. Not the
bill. It happens to me all the time.
That's the whole point of a bill, isn't it? To change the law.
Yes. Okay. Mr. Chairman?
Representative...
McGuire.
Carguire.
Carguire. I see where the committee is going in terms of wondering whether or not we're trying to drive home the issue of whether or not we have Alaska Native corporations or tribes and whether it's a sovereignty issue and so on. But setting that to the side, I think it actually does, at least Amendment Number 1, does make a good point in that what we're saying is we want, so looking up above on page 3 on line 13, we're saying for an organization to be eligible to be awarded a grant under this section, the organization's proposal must include. So then we go through documentation, the organization, and so on. I do think it's important in the sense that if we're going to codify what was a pilot program that was successful and put the parameters around what it is, that we make it clear that we want it to be that program that has qualified. And I think the concern would be without that specific definition that you could say has received federal approval of its federal tribal family assistance plan to operate a tribal assistance program in the state. It could be any tribal assistance program in the state. And I don't know what those would be. I don't know that sitting here in the room we could know what they would be, but I think the point of the bill anyway is to confine it to this this newly created Alaska program that has the parameters around it, and I assume, or the Alaska Native Organization Family Assistance Program, I assume that, and I don't know, but part of the program was successful, maybe part of it wasn't, but what we're codifying today is the Alaska Native Organization Family Assistance Program.
Mr. Chairman.
Chairman Berkowitz.
On that point, I mean, just looking at the policy call, is when you tie, make an effort to tie to existing organizations under 4727070, that precludes the possibility and the flexibility that would come from leaving the language a little more open, that, for example, the federal government might decide to accept a different types of entities. And I don't know if we want to do that. But, and also as a technical matter, I'd note that in the amendment, there's reference to Alaska Native Organization Family Assistance Programs, whereas that term, a Native Organization Family Assistance Program, exists in 4727070, but it doesn't exist in the context of the page 3, line 17. So you're using two terms, where I think you're only trying to use one term.
I agree. I think it should be Family Assistance Program.
Except, I mean, I'm not sure which it should be, because the existing statute, through the chair, it refers to Native Organization Family Assistance Program. So it seems like just flopping back and forth, and
family.
Those kind of inconsistencies hopefully don't result in problems, but sometimes do.
Well, I would hope the collective wisdom of this committee, which I thoroughly respect, sort this little issue out. I think, Representative Berkowitz, you're saying the reference in the First Amendment to the 070 statute is delimiting too much?
I think it's limiting.
Right.
For example, if the feds say, well, we're going to recognize a village corporation's Native Family Assistance Program, or the feds say, we're going to have some kind of amalgamation between the different nonprofits, then the impact of tying it to 4727070 might limit the ability of that new organization to receive assistance under.
Well, great. Then I'd like to go back to the department to your original, very original question, mm-hmm. which was, can any other organizations qualify under this new statute or this bill if they're not an 070 defined organization? I mean, that should answer the question. Do you have to be an 070?
If I understood correctly, my understanding is correct, and Ms. Fitzgerald can correct me if I'm wrong, the authorization to provide these services comes from a federal statute in the 1213, which includes Metlakatla. The 13 organizations that are authorized to administer this program are set forth specifically in federal law, and they're just basically cut and pasted into 4727070. So unless there's a change in the federal statute that authorizes this TANF program, no other entity, organization, tribal or otherwise, in the state could administer the program. We'd have to, if the feds amended their statute, we'd have to come in and amend our statute to mirror that authorization. If they took an organization away, or they added four more, or whatever the case may be.
Follow up, President Berkowitz.
Yeah, Ms. Curley, so under the bill as currently exists, if the feds changed the statute and this bill were to pass, it would, and the feds incorporated XYZ entity, XYZ would qualify automatically under the existing statute. But if we adopted the amendment, because XYZ isn't listed in 070, we'd have to change 070 before XYZ could receive assistance.
Mr. Chair, Representative Berkowitz, that'd be correct.
Okay,
so we'd have to amend 070 to add those entities.
But under the bill, the way it currently stands, it would be automatic. We wouldn't require new statutory. It wouldn't require an amendment to 070. That's the point I want to get to.
Well, if I might interject, Reverend Berkowitz, then it would be a really strange construction if we would adopt the amendment. To do that, you'd have to remove the Alaska statute under Title 47 and replace it with federal U.S. code. Yeah, that's what you do. So this is kind of nuts. That means an Alaska Family Organization, which is under this bill, then you know, it's got to be in compliance with the federal law. We do the reference to federal law all the time, but that's kind of a real strained construction here. So I'm not sure I favor that. Because that's basically what you just said, if I'm not mistaken.
No, it's not, if I could.
That's the effect of it, though. The hour.
070 contains reference to a bundle of corporations, 13 entities. And under the amendment, the only entities that would be allowed to act with the tribal assistance programs would be that bundle of 13. If, for example, the federal government said that we accept that those 13 are currently acceptable, but we want to create a 14th, a 15th, or a 16th one, which is possible given what Ted Stevens, among others, can do back there, the state legislature would have to come back and change 070 before entities 14, 15, and 16 could operate under this statute.
You mean we would retain our state sovereignty and not let the feds push us around? Is that what you're saying?
Well, I don't want to make you be consistent, Mr. Chair.
Representative Berkowitz, through the chair, I just want to clarify that the way the law before you is presented, the proposed law, Senate Bill 51, and current law, in either case, we would need to come in and amend 070 if the federal government changed so that other Native organizations could run tribal family assistance programs.
So the amendment has no impact on the flexibility.
Correct.
Of the program. Okay. So my premise is incorrect.
I'll withdraw my objection. The motion of amendment number one is before the body. Is there any further objections to adopting?
I maintain my objection.
Representative Berkowitz maintains his objection. Would the clerk read the roll, please?
Yes.
Representative Berkowitz.
No.
Representative Pitula.
No.
Representative Harris.
Yes.
Representative Cockhill.
Yes.
Representative Corrin.
No.
Chair Roper.
Yes. 4-3, we have before us amendment number two.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman, I would move amendment number two. That would be the G2 version.
Number two, or other objections?
I object.
Speak to your objections, Representative Berkowitz.
No, I'll just vote.
Just for the record, the department, this is basically just consistent with the other amendment. Is there any other, anything unusual here we haven't discussed?
Just the point that I've made, and perhaps someone can take a look at it. There's a difference in the terminology between Native organization and,
Native
Native Family Assistance Program.
Representative Kako.
Mr. Chairman, on page 3, line 13, it just says for an organization to be eligible. And so I really think that we're okay. I think we're consistent enough. That I can understand. I'd rather have the language uniform too, but I think we're okay in here.
Yeah.
There has to be some definite guidelines that they have to be organized. So I have no problem with it.
Is your objection maintained, sir?
I do, for different grounds.
Would the clerk please read the roll?
Representative Berkowitz.
No.
Representative
Pitula.
No. Representative Harris.
Yes.
Representative Cogman.
Yes.
Representative
Yes.
Yes.
Yes. We've adopted amendments number one and number two. What's the will of the committee?
Mr. Chairman, I move that we move CS for Senate Bill number 51 as amended with individual recommendations and attach fiscal notes out of this committee.
Thank you, Representative McGuire, for that motion. We have any objections to the motion? Seeing none, so moved. Thank you very much. Thank you for coming on. Next, we'll take up. Let's take a very brief at ease, but then we're going to take up House Bill 98, and we have some amendments to be distributed.
It's the 27th today.
Mm-hmm.
We'll have on our calendar House Bill 98, and we do have. Let's do the Let's do G5, the commissioners first. We'll mark that as amendment number one.
Mr. Chairman.
Representative Cockhill.
Move amendment number one.
We have before us amendment number one. I hear
an objection.
Objection for discussion. Ms. Tibble, sir. And just for opening, this is something that, frankly, I brought forward the discussions on this. I'll take full responsibility. And I believe that this is an amendment that was in concept offered by Governor Knowles at the end of his last administration, and seems to be a good idea because I believe our commissioners are underpaid in the state. Mr. Tibbles, can you tell us that?
Amazing how that happens. Mr. Chairman, for the record, Mike Tibbles with the Department of Administration. As I think I've explained in the past, the commissioner salaries are a unique situation since it's tied to a range and a step in the statute, and that creates a problem because you have directors and deputy commissioners that, through longevity, make more money than the commissioners themselves. That's one point. The second point is that the heads of large organizations, if you look at the compensation compared to the private sector or even other states, and we've looked at the Western average, through CSG, Alaska is not offering competitive salaries.
Does he know what amendment he's talking to?
Yeah, this is the commissioner's. He is.
I thought amendment 101 was the.
The same arguments tend to apply.
G5.
Okay. Let's save the fun one for last.
Change that to number two.
The questions of Mr. Tibbles, Representative Kirsten Fistula.
Doing good?
You're doing so well,
man,
Mr. Chairman.
We're 11 years.
We're going to teach you how to say it in Finnish next. So.
Well, if you call me Rokeberg, I don't mind.
Okay, so my question is,
Birkenberg.
Could you, with the amendment, conceivably have a commissioner starting at a lower range, and that way actually for the people who hadn't been in state service, you might wind up with a 28A to begin with rather than the 28E. I mean, shouldn't it be not less than step E, range 28, just so we don't, I mean, if the logic is to get people in at a good salary, you wouldn't want them starting lower than that, possibly.
Through the chair, Representative Pertula, I would read the amendment that 28A would be an option. The full scale of 28 through 30 would be options for the commissioner salaries.
And on that point, isn't it true that if a governor was able to hire a commissioner under a lower range, perhaps somebody that moved up or something that was making a substantial increase, that they accept the position, they were able to do it. So why, this just creates a flexibility. Mm-hmm. This is the, the we're saving money side of the amendment. Bad chance. Representative McGuire.
And then just while we're on that point, I agree. On the lower end, you want more discretion. On the upper end of the range 30, do we want to put the sideboard of a range of a step E, or do we want to let it run all out? I guess it's just.
Mr. Tibbles, do you have a comment on that?
Through the chair, Representative McGuire. My concern, if you put a step in on range 30, it doesn't take that long. In a 28 before you would equal a 30A, and so as you move up, you're going to run against a barrier even at a different step because you can calculate an equivalent. And I would ask, I'm not an attorney, but I would see a problem where you could have a number of years at 28 and you'd bump up against the equivalent of a 30 something.
Yeah, step back.
Okay. Representative Cockhill, sir.
I've only been here 7 years, but I think I've been here longer than a lot of commissioners, and no disrespect, but because of the four-year cycle of gubernatorial issues, even when there was a governor here that had 8 years, the commissioners changed rather rapidly. So I don't know that it's a big deal.
Mr. Chair.
Harris.
You know, one of the issues that I've always had, in the pay thing, I think the governor, other than perhaps long-term. People and judges or whatever like that end up. The governor ought to be the highest paid person that we have in the state bureaucracy, so to speak. Especially, should be paid more than the commissioners. The governor's the boss, whoever the governor may be, and shouldn't should his people working for the governor shouldn't be paid more than the governor, in my opinion.
He's smiling.
And so what I say is, what is the top range of a what is the top step in a range 30 get? What would that be?
Through the chair, Representative Harris, if you go all the way out to the end of this pay schedule, that would be a 30M. And the dollar amount for
125.
30M. Do you have that in front of you? I have it right here. Currently, a 30M would be an annual salary of 117.
117?
There's a figure on that sheet with the 5 and 2.
Oh, okay. For the record, Ms. Seitz, referring to the commissioner's spreadsheet here, if that's the adoption of the bill before us with the 5, 2, and 2 range goes up to $124,752 from the current 117. So.
Oh, that's correct. Mr. Chairman, I would have a hard time having anything more than whatever step in a range 30 would be 115 or less. So that would be the highest I would want to see. If you're going to, and I know we're in another amendment for that, but if we're going to set the governor's salary at $115,000, I wouldn't want a commissioner getting more money than that.
Well, just for a point, Mr. Tibbetts, you want to come to that. There's several specialties and practitioners and so forth that make more than that. We got psychiatrists. We got all kinds of people.
But Mr. Chairman, those are specialty people. These are commissioners are not necessarily specialty people. Most of the time, they're political appointees. By a governor coming in for somebody who they want to work with, and that's our process. And they're not necessarily always anything special. They're not a psychiatrist, or they're not a judge, or they're not this or that. And so, I think I just have a difficult time with commissioners at commissioner level making more than the governor does.
Well, under the amendment, that's just flexibility. They wouldn't necessarily make more.
But they could, is what I'm saying. I'd like it so they couldn't.
Oh, you hard guy. Mr. Tibbles.
Mr. Chairman, if I offer one scenario, if you look through the executive branch, we have a number of directors that have been in place longer than the commissioners, and they have a lot of expertise in certain, in particular areas, and are a good applicant pool to move up when vacancies do occur. I was just calculating out at a range 26 director level, first year in longevity at 7 years, you are at the 28E, which is the current salary for the commissioner. And so not only, when you start putting in caps, then we end up with the same situation that we have now. It just becomes barriers to be able to move people that have been in the state system up. And so you may extend the line and have less of a disincentive for certain people, but at some point there's always going to be, when you put that cap in there, the lower the cap is, the greater the opportunity, the chance that you're going to have problems in the future drawing on your longer term employees and to move them up.
Mr. Chairman, let me add something here to the mix. People that work for the state long term in those types of positions are not normally subject to the change in administrations. Commissioners are. They all go. When you have a change of administration, they're gone. They have no expected longevity other than the length of time if they work with their boss. But if you happen to be a state employee and you're doing your job, and whoever comes in, if you're doing a good job, they usually keep them around. Mm-hmm. And they build up their longevity. But in a commissioner's job, or even a deputy commissioner's job, their longevity is usually the life of the governor, however long that is. So if they want to keep their pay going up in those lower levels, and stay there. But if you want to be subject to termination or loss of your job, then get on board with a sitting governor. Because when they're gone, you're probably gone.
Mr. Will, can a division director also be terminated with a change of administration?
Mr. Chairman, division directors are partially exempt and do frequently turn over it with administrations. Not always, but they do.
Just for everybody, on the comparative chart here that I provided the committee, it has the department heads on it, and of the 13 states that are listed here, and if you threw Alaska out, the 12 states, 10 of them have higher amounts than the 115 that we're proposing for our chief executive. So we're way behind the power curve. If we're recruiting even today.
Change the governor's salary to more than.
Well.
I mean, well, that's not, we're not the right building in front of us right now. The right amendment.
At any rate, I speak in favor of the amendment without modifying it in terms of, I see the recruiting issues, the fact that we're competing with for top, very top talented people. Look, we prefer to hire locally, obviously, but sometimes we have to reach out. Look like our current Commissioner of Health and Human Services. Brilliant guy that I'm sure would be highly recruited by a lot of folks, and you know, to be able to reach out of state, and we did reach out of state for him and brought him into the state. And I think we need to be competitive in terms of that. Representative Beth, did you have any? You got a question?
No, I'm still a little worried about starting it at lower than the E. So that's all.
You're worried about saving money, okay? Any further comments?
Glad to hear that,
Representative Coghill.
I think Representative Harris brings up a good point in that they're hired and fired at will. So I think the range that we're going at is good. The argument that it needs to be higher than the governor, I don't know. There's a whole different package that goes with the governor, and I think that there's probably less of that. Yeah, I mean, I guess you could say even public housing, but I think that some of those benefits probably outweigh the actual dollar amount that we'd be looking at. So I'm going to stick with this and probably keep, you know, I don't mind if they're equitable, because like you say, the psychiatrists that they hire from the state are going to have to come in and talk to both of them anyway, and there you get $135,000 a year. So.
Right.
So I think we're okay here.
Any further comments? Anybody else want to testify on this amendment? Stay right there, Mike. Any further discussion from the committee? Are the objections maintained on the amendment?
No.
No? Seeing none, the amendment carries, and we adopt amendment number one. Next, we'll bring up amendment number two. This is the
G3.
Representative Coghill.
Mr. Chairman, I'll move amendment number two.
Can I hear objection from Representative Berkowitz? No.
Me.
No, Representative Harris, excuse me. And we have before us amendment number two. And what this amendment does is increase the annual salary of the governor to $115,000 and the annual salary of the lieutenant governor to $100,000.
I want to entertain an amendment to the amendment.
Oh, hold on a second.
Go ahead.
Just for the record, I would like to direct everybody's attention to page 3 and AS 3920010, which is attached here too, that establishes the annual salaries of both the governor and the lieutenant governor. The provisions of 3920020 indicate the following. The governor is entitled to receive the salary established for the office effective from the date on which the oath of office is taken by the governor. And similarly, in 040, the same provision applies to the lieutenant governor's office. Therefore, under the current statutes, enactment of any increase in the governor's or lieutenant governor's salary would not be effective until the swearing in of our next governor in December of 2006. And quite frankly, I brought this issue forward of my own accord, not at the request of the governor. The governor, as recently as yesterday, made a statement in which I witnessed that said he has already raised his children and did not need to raise. but thought it perhaps would be good for the next occupant in the governor's mansion. So it should be clear and on the record that this did not come from the governor or the governor's office. And additionally, that the impact of the effective date wouldn't be until the next swearing in of the following governor, the next governor of the state, whoever that might be. So with that, Representative Harris, you had a recommendation.
I do. I have a proposed amendment. In a sense, I didn't object to the last amendment, even though I stated some. I would like to move that the governor's salary be increased from $115,000 to $130,000, which would allow the governor to be paid more than the highest range for a commissioner, which would end up being about $124,000, $125,000. So the motion is to amend line 8 from $115,000 to $130,000.
I'll object for purpose of discussion. What I would point out, additionally, I did provide the chart to the members here, and one of the reasons for selecting the $115,000 range initially is that of the, I believe, 13 states, western states, when you exclude Alaska, the average compensation currently in all those states is $113,142. Therefore, rounding to 115 to give us a rational basis for selecting that particular salary range. So it's intended to replicate the average of all other chief executives, governors in our neighboring states. Arnold makes $175,000, just for everybody, and Alaska's the lowest paid at $85,766 of current compensation level. And so the amendment before us is to increase it by, what, $15,000?
Yes.
$15,000.
Mr. Chairman.
Representative Harris. There,
you know, one of the comparisons that we can... There's no conflict yet, Ethan.
We've got it.
I'm not going to take an idea so we can chuckle, late. Right?
one of the comparisons that we have in the state is the president of the university. And if I'm not mistaken, the president of the university is somewhere in the $250,000 a year range at this point in time. Oh, yeah. Quite frankly, I'd say that the governor of the state has a lot more responsibility for a lot more employees and a lot more things happening than the president of the university. Nothing against the president of the university, but the president of the university makes a lot more than we're even anticipating proposing for the governor. And so I don't think, quite frankly, $130,000 is anywhere out of the range for the responsibilities that the chief executive of the state has to bear. And I think it's been unfairly held down for years, and it wouldn't make any difference to me who was elected. The next governor, whoever it may be, should have that opportunity, and should not, in my opinion, be paid lower than the people that work for him, other than specialty people. Especially people that the governor appoints.
Well, Mr. Representative Harris, speaking to your amendment to the amendment, just for your information, by my brief cursory examination of the governor's salaries in our neighboring states, if we were to agree to your amendment to the amendment, the Alaskan governor in 2006 would be the fifth from the top in terms of compensation.
We paid the same as Wyoming, right?
Right. So, or equivalent to. So, California at 175. Nevada going up to in 07 to 141,000, and Washington State at 145, and Wyoming at 130. So it would be tied for fourth there, it looks like, right? If we were even to adopt your amendment, so it's certainly not out of line. I believe my conversations with the other body indicated their desire to be using a rational basis test on this issue, but I don't really find your amendment too offensive. But
Mr. Chairman?
Representative McGuire.
One other thing I like about raising it to that amount and keeping the lieutenant governors, I think the differential is more in keeping with the job. When you look at, and I understand that the original idea was we'd keep the same differential that we have now, but really when you look at these other western states, in many of them there is a higher differential, and I do think the job of being the governor for the entire state is worthy of a lot more than the lieutenant governor's salary. So I think it kind of meshes there, too. And I would just echo what the speaker said. You know, it's not benefiting this governor. I think it's appropriate to think about, this is the head of our state, and a big state with a lot of really important issues facing us. And I think it's time that we raise it up. And I don't think we're going to do it again for a long time, because I think it's a very difficult political step to make. So I suspect somebody will be here 15 years from now looking at this.
Well, one other thing I would like to bring up before we take up the action on the amendment to the amendment is, Mr. Tibbles, could you describe to the committee and for the record what other benefits accrue to the office of governor in the state of Alaska in terms of expenses and housing benefits and the like?
Mr. Chairman, I'm actually not really able to speak to that today. I know the statute says that the salary that is provided in statute is considered the complete compensation. I don't know how to put a value on any public value of
the governor receive any expense accounts? Does he receive allowances for the housing, and how does the mansion fit into the thing? Is there anybody here? Do you have any assistance to answer something?
Mr. Chairman,
looking for help.
Mr. Chairman, in doing the budget, I mean, obviously the governor has they have funds that they have available, just as the legislature has funds that we pay for our travel on legislative business and that sort of thing. I'm sure that the governor doesn't have to pay a rent fee for staying in the governor's mansion, those types of things. But, you know, the president of the university gets a free car, gets a free house, and gets an expense account. I don't think that the governor probably, the governor, as far as I know, we have a state vehicle that the governor drives around in, but the governor has his own vehicle as well, and I think it's his own private vehicle. Maybe the state pays for his gas. I don't know. But I think that's, I mean, we're just talking about compensation for somebody doing a job, and, you know, I don't think that's unreasonable at all.
Well, the chair had requested from the administration some of this information. That's why the chair is a little miffed. So.
I'm going to take committees.
No. But I think we'd like to have this information before the bill hits the floor. I mean, you don't have to go out and talk to the press. You know, the governor, I understand, is required to live in the house and entertain on behalf of the state. I believe he receives some allowances and does have to pay his salaries over there. There's some arrangement for what he's required to reimburse. So, you know, I'm not sure it's an entire free ride. So I think he does have obligations to pay. I wish we had that before the committee so it was understandable to the public. Certainly a question they will have. At any rate.
Just remove your objection.
Actually.
And I'll object.
Right. Let's have a, you going to maintain your objection?
My objection.
No, he made the motion.
I made the motion. Oh, you objected to my motion.
On the floor.
Actually, I won't go in there. No. Okay. I said corrected. I maintain my objection. So we have a vote before us. Is Representative Harris, you want to restate your amendment to the amendment?
Just very simple. Raise the governor's compensation on line 8 from $115,000 to $130,000.
Okay. Would the clerk read the roll?
Representative Berkowitz, not present. Representative Mottola?
Yes.
Representative Harris?
Yes.
Representative Cockhill?
No.
Representative Corey?
No.
Yes.
Pass.
Yeah.
You're the end.
It's all on you, baby.
I have to vote no. Where is the net? Make sure she knows that. Mr. Chairman.
Can we take it easy, Mr. Speaker?
Yeah, we'll take a brief edit. Need
to go to the bathroom.
Sorry, John.
I'll be back.
Conceptual amendment number.
No, this will be more than conceptual.
Oh, I'm sorry.
This will be a very.
We're on amending an amendment to the amendment.
Okay. On line 8, I move to change $115,000 to $125,000.
Are there any objections?
I'll object.
The majority leader objects. Is there any further discussion? Seeing none, would the clerk read the roll?
Representative Berkowitz, not present.
Yes.
Representative Harris?
Yes.
Representative Cockhill?
No.
Representative Corey?
No.
Representative McGuire?
Yes.
Yes. Just for the record, that would, under our calculations, still meet the speaker's concern about its equivalent to or the maximum of what we understand to be 30 M's. Is that right, Mr. Tibbles? Yeah, it's 24. My records show 24,752 as a 30 M, fully based on the contemplated increases within this bill before us.
Talk about the university president.
Oh, we could. Is this a Pago Graham Redman? We can take from one and give. No, no.
Okay.
Are there any more amendments before us? Seeing none, what's the will of the committee? Wait a minute. Hold one.
Yeah.
Oh, good idea.
The motion is before us, Mr. Chairman, on amendment number two.
Yes, sir. My oversight, how bad of me. So we have Representative Coghill's amendment number two before us as amended.
Right, Senator Coghill.
What did I say?
I moved the amendment. That's just.
What did I say?
I'm swallowing my tongue.
Hearing no objection, the amendment passes, right?
Are there any objections to adopting amendment number two as amended? Seeing none, so adopted. With that, we're adjourned.
No, we got to pass the bill now.
Oh, I rescind my adjournment.
Oh.
House, I'm sorry, I'm trying to quick gaveling myself. Where's Garrow when I need him?
Be careful now.
I know, I'll be nice. We have before us now House Bill 98. Are we back on, Chris? Thank you. My apologies to our secretary.
Ashley, you got any amendments?
Wrong bill.
That's right.
We have back before us House Bill 98 as amended. What's the will of the committee?
Mr. Chairman.
Oh. Representative Harris.
I didn't have the right bill in front of me.
Representative Coghill.
I'd like to move that we pass CS for House Bill 98 State Affairs as amended out of House rules with individual recommendations and the attached fiscal notes.
And the notes that forthcoming new fiscal notes.
Sir, and the new forthcoming fiscal notes, which would be significant.
Just for the amended versions. Are there any objections? Seeing none, so ordered. Thank you very much. Thank you for everybody for coming this morning. We are adjourned.
Now we can go through.